Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, August 3rd, 2022. I'm your reader, Janet Griffith. I'll ask you to excuse any thunder in the background. We're having a thunderstorm as I'm recording this morning. Starting on page one, the first headline reads, Community Honors Slain Cedar Falls Family. 11 days after three members of a Cedar Falls family were shot to death while camping at the Maquoketa Cave State Park in eastern Iowa, community members honored them Tuesday night in a celebration of life for parents Tyler and Sarah Schmidt, both 42, and their six-year-old daughter Lula Schmidt. The family's nine-year-old son Arlo survived the attack. A GoFundMe page established to help him had raised nearly $272,000 by Tuesday night. Tyler was an IT specialist and Sarah worked at the Cedar Falls Library. Investigators have said they have not found a motive for why 23-year-old Anthony Sherwin of Nebraska found dead of suicide at the park, shot the three family members. Continuing with front page news, Linmar School's phones network down. Disruption comes a month after cyber breach at CR Schools by Sabine Martin. A month after a cyber attack closed Cedar Rapids schools and compromised personal computerized information of its district employees, Linmar Community Schools said it now is investigating the source of its phones going down and its computer systems being disrupted. Linmar Superintendent Shannon Bisgard wrote in a message to district staff Monday that visitors will be limited on school campuses until further notice, as a third-party specialist works with the district to assess the impact and recover its systems as soon as possible. He did not describe the issue in his message as the result of a cyber attack. Amy Adams, an FBI public affairs specialist, said the agency does not confirm or deny the existence of an investigation and would not say if it is aware of Linmar's network disturbance. The Linmar district has 1,200 staff who serve 8,000 students across 12 buildings. Students through ninth grade start school August 23rd, and those in grades 10 to 12 start August 24th. Some summer programs, including daycare, teams, and activities, are allowed to enter district facilities on a case-by-case basis, Bisgard wrote. Our network and phone systems are currently down, but our online registration system is still available, he wrote. School Board President Britannia Mori said the board meeting will start as scheduled at 5 p.m. Monday. Mori said she is meeting with the third-party group to guide the board and could not comment further. Kevin Fry, Linmar Communications Coordinator, said the district has no additional comments and did not respond to the Gazette whether any employee information was exposed from the system disruption. The Cedar Rapids Community School District paused summer programming, letting 750 students off from summer school for a week after a cybersecurity breach over the 4th of July holiday. The breach, which the Cedar Rapids District has not publicly detailed or said whether it was asked to pay a ransom to hackers, caused personal information on its employees to be exposed. And the last item from today's front page, dry and drought zones now cover half of state. Worsening dry conditions afflict southern Iowa crops. By Jared Strong of the Iowa Capital Dispatch. Drought conditions are likely to develop over the southern half of Iowa in August as the month starts with a string of abnormally hot days with little chance for rain, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. The portion of the state that is abnormally dry or in varying degrees of drought expanded last week to more than half the state. It's the first time the dry area has been that large since April, when persistent rains delayed corn planting. The latest Drought Monitor report released last week showed an expansion of severe and extreme drought in northwest Iowa and the extension of abnormally dry conditions across much of southern Iowa. In all honesty, we are kind of at a pivotal point this week, depending on what our temperatures do, said Aaron Seugling, an Iowa State University Extension field agronomist who monitors southwest Iowa. Our water demand just grows exponentially. He said farmers' drought worries about their crops have worsened as available soil moisture has quickly deteriorated in the past 2 months. The area's total rainfall ranged from 0.5 to 1.5 inches of rain for the entire month of July, he said, compared with the normally expected amounts of more than 4 inches. Southwest Iowa previously led the state in available soil moisture, according to U.S. Department of Agriculture reports. In early June, about 96% of its topsoil and subsoil had adequate or surplus moisture. As of Sunday, about 27% of topsoil and 36% of subsoil had adequate water for crops to grow. The stress on the corn is most apparent in the afternoon, Soigling said, when the plants roll their leaves to retain moisture. They are basically shutting down photosynthetically, he said, and they're in the reproductive phase, so that affects grain yield. Over the past 2 weeks, the swath of southern Iowa in abnormally dry conditions has swelled, the drought monitor shows, but the portions of Linn and Johnson counties in that zone have remained largely unchanged in that period, the southwestern tip of Linn and the western portion of Johnson. Neither of the counties currently is classified in a drought condition. The National Weather Service issued a heat advisory for Tuesday afternoon for most of the state. Actual temperatures were expected to approach or exceed 100 degrees, and high humidity will make it feel much warmer. We're in a pattern that essentially is causing warm air to get pulled in from the south, said Dylan Dodson, a meteorologist for the National Weather Service. It'll cool off a little bit, relatively speaking, but it will stay hot through the end of the weekend. The 8 to 14 day outlook keeps us hot. The relative cooling happens after Tuesday, when there is a chance of scattered storms across the state and a reduction in high temperatures today of 5 to 10 degrees, but that still means much of the state will reach the high 80s or 90s. Justin Glisson, state climatologist for the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, says he expects the dry conditions to expand in the early part of August, but said the month has been trending wetter in the past decade. The law of averages, that's how I'd like to see things, he said. We have the hot snap and then maybe see below average temperatures and more rainfall. Last week, the state averaged temperatures of about 3 degrees cooler than normal with abysmal rainfall, Glisson wrote in his weekly report for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Much of the South had no rain, and the highest reported rainfall accumulation was 89 hundredths of an inch near Chirton. Crop conditions suffered as a result. The state's corn was rated 76% good or excellent, down from 80% the previous week. Soybeans were rated 73% good or excellent, down from 75%. And now moving to local and regional news on the inside pages of the paper. Man arrested after threatening bar staff. Gun was stolen out of Linn County, according to police, by Isabella Zaluska, Iowa City. A man was arrested in downtown Iowa City last weekend after police say he threatened the staff at El Rey's Live and Dive with a stolen gun. Alex Boyanga, 18, is facing felony charges of intimidation with a dangerous weapon, trafficking a stolen weapon used in a crime, and control of a firearm by a felon. Boyanga of Rock Island, Illinois, is also facing aggravated misdemeanor charges of using a dangerous weapon and assault while displaying a dangerous weapon. Iowa City police were called to El Rey's, 211 Iowa Avenue, just after midnight Sunday. After getting kicked out of the bar, Boyanga allegedly verbally threatened staff, pulled out a loaded gun, and pointed it at bar staff, according to criminal complaints. A University of Iowa Hawk alert that was sent to students reported that Boyanga was wearing all black and a ski mask. No shots were fired, according to the alert. Boyanga fled but was located by officers. He denied being involved in carrying a gun, but officers allegedly found the gun in his waistband during a pat-down, police said in the complaint. Boyanga fought officers when they attempted to arrest him and feigned a medical condition, according to the complaint. Boyanga refused to identify himself. He received care at the scene and was evaluated at a hospital before his arrest, according to police. The gun was stolen out of Linn County, the complaint said. Iowa City police could not provide additional information about the stolen gun, including where it was stolen from, how Boyanga got the gun, and when it was reported stolen, because it is part of the ongoing investigation or related to another agency. Boyanga had his initial appearance Monday. He is being held in the Johnson County Jail on a $14,000 cash or surety bond. The alleged victim has filed a temporary no-contact order against Boyanga. Energy storage system in CR now operational. Alliant Energy facility capable of storing enough energy to power 5,000 homes for 2 hours. By Brittany J. Miller. A new 5-megawatt energy storage system from Alliant Energy is now operational in Cedar Rapids. The battery system is capable of storing enough energy to power about 5,000 homes for 2 hours. Its addition more than doubles Alliant's previous energy storage capacity in Iowa. Crews completed construction of the site earlier this year, Alliant spokesman Tony Police said in an email. It sits at 1445 Wilson Avenue Southwest near Alliant's Deer Run substation. It is also the site of the company's recently announced community solar garden. The new project is Alliant's fourth battery storage system to be completed in Iowa, according to police. It increases Alliant's battery storage capacity in Iowa from 3.5 to 8.5 megawatts. The project's testing and commissioning finished just last week. This project is fully operational and will allow us to continue researching and documenting the system's performance, design features, and grid integration as we explore the many uses and benefits of utility-scale battery systems, police said. Electricity travels across the power grid at the speed of light, so it must be generated and consumed at the same time. Battery storage helps keep the grid balanced by preserving energy when demand is low and releasing it as needed. With the extra storage capability, Alliant can take advantage of more renewable energy generation. We see enormous potential for energy storage systems as we continue our transition to safe, reliable, and cost-effective renewable energy for our customers, Mayuri Farlinger, Alliant's Vice President of Customer and Community Engagement, said in a news release Tuesday morning. These projects follow Alliant's Clean Energy Blueprint, which outlines how the company will transition to cleaner and more affordable energy solutions. In 2021, the company announced its intent to acquire 200 megawatts of solar energy and 75 megawatts of battery energy storage from the proposed Duane Arnold Solar Projects 1 and 2 near Palo. The Linn County Board of Supervisors is set to take up the projects over the course of three considerations at the end of August. Quad Cities Media, ousted from school safety meeting, sues. Meeting with school directors came after Texas attack. By Tom Lowy of the Quad City Times. The Quad City Times and three other local news companies have joined the Iowa Freedom of Information Council in a lawsuit against the Bettendorf Community School District and its board of directors. The suit alleges the district prevented journalists from covering a recent meeting at which parents expressed concern about violence in the district's middle school. A 46-year-old nonprofit advocacy organization, the Iowa Freedom of Information Council, is joined by the Times and television stations KWQC, WQAD, and WHBF, questioning the legality of a meeting May 25th, attended by 200 to 300 parents, along with a majority of the members of the school board and Superintendent Michelle Morse. School employees were stationed at the doors of the Waterfront Center to keep reporters and photographers out. Literally blocking journalists from a public meeting is unacceptable, said Matt Christensen, editor of the Times. School board members were listening to public feedback meant to guide policy. On an issue as important as school safety, the public deserves to know. A news release from the Iowa Freedom of Information Council pointed out the gathering was held one day after the massacre at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas, killing 21 students and teachers. The meeting in Bettendorf followed mounting complaints from parents during the recently completed academic year about the lack of adequate response by school officials to rowdy behavior that left some students and their parents fearful, the council's news release said. The lawsuit asks Scott County District Court to find the school district in violation of Iowa's open meetings law and to issue an injunction prohibiting the school board from violating the statute in the future. The lawsuit also asked the court to fine members of the board who took part in the meeting. The news release said a letter sent to Superintendent Morse and School Board President Rebecca Eastman a week after the May 25th meeting, the Iowa FOI Council and managers of the news companies expressed profound disappointment with Bettendorf officials' decision to keep journalists from covering the meeting. The topic discussed on the evening of Wednesday, May 25th, was one of the fundamental responsibilities of the Bettendorf Community School District, ensuring the safety and well-being of the district's 4,700 students during each school day, the letter said. The letter also said that a meeting between parents and district officials about the behavior of some Bettendorf middle school students, including bullying and injuries suffered by students not otherwise involved in the incidents, does not fall within the meaning of deliberations on matters clearly within the scope of the Board of Education's policymaking duties. Randy Evans, the executive director of the Iowa FOI Council, said the authors of Iowa's open meetings law recognized the important work journalists do in informing the public about the issues and problems government faces and the potential solutions. CR woman wins $300,000 in Iowa lottery scratch game. Winner and her husband plan to use winnings to buy new vehicles, pay bills. By Tom Barton of the Gazette Des Moines Bureau. A Cedar Rapids woman won a $300,000 lottery prize this week on a $30 scratch game. Michelle Lutensky claimed the 13th of 19 top prizes in the Iowa Lottery's colossal crossword scratch game. Lutensky claimed her prize at lottery headquarters in Clive. The 62-year-old bought the winning ticket Monday at Hy-Vee Gas at 3935 Blair's Ferry Road Northeast in Cedar Rapids and scratched the ticket in her friend's truck, according to a news release from the Iowa Lottery. After she finished scratching, Lutensky counted up her completed words and realized she'd reached the game's top prize level. She verified her win by scanning it with the Iowa Lottery mobile app. "It was craziness, shaking, scared, crying, all kinds of emotions," Lutensky told Iowa Lottery officials as she claimed her prize. "It was overwhelming, and it's a moment I'll never forget, I'll tell you that. I'll never forget scratching that ticket and seeing that $300,000, those numbers, all those zeros." Lutensky said she and her husband planned to use part of the winnings to buy a couple of vehicles and pay some bills. The scratch game features 19 top prizes of $300,000 and 56 prizes of $10,000, according to the lottery. Iowa's Miller, state AGs expand work to reduce robocalls, by the Gazette Des Moines Bureau. Iowa Attorney General Tom Miller announced Tuesday his office has joined a nationwide task force of state attorneys general working to cut down on illegal and unwanted robocalls used to scam seniors and defraud consumers nationwide. The bipartisan group has issued 20 civil investigative demands to 20 gateway providers and other entities that are allegedly responsible for a majority of foreign robocall traffic in the United States, according to a news release. The task force will focus on the bad actors throughout the telecommunications industry to help reduce the number of illegal and unwanted robocalls that Iowans and other Americans receive, according to the release. More than 33 million robocalls are made to Americans every day, according to the National Consumer Law Center and Electronic Privacy Information Center. And an estimated $29.8 billion was stolen through scam calls in 2021, with most of the robocall traffic originating overseas. The task force is focused on shutting down the providers that profit from this illegal scam traffic and refuse to take steps to otherwise mitigate these scam calls, according to the release. Miller also offered the following tips for Iowans to avoid scams and unwanted calls. Be wary of callers who ask you to pay by gift card, wire transfer, or cryptocurrency. For example, the Internal Revenue Service does not accept iTunes gift cards. Look out for pre-recorded calls from imposters posing as government agencies. Typically, the Social Security Administration does not make phone calls to individuals. If you suspect fraudulent activity, hang up and do not provide any personal information. You can also contact the Consumer Protection Division within the Iowa Attorney General's office by email at consumer@ag.iowa.gov or by calling 515-281-5926 or 888-777-4590. Iowans can also file a do not call or text complaint at iowaattorneygeneral.gov. Dems to hold discussion on reproductive freedom, virtual speaker series hosted by Heart of Iowa Democrats, by Tom Barton of the Gazette Des Moines Bureau. A group of Northeast Iowa Democrats will hold a virtual speakers panel on reproductive freedom in the wake of a U.S. Supreme Court decision that overturned a constitutional right to access an abortion. The Heart of Iowa Speaker Series is hosted by Heart of Iowa Democrats of Benton, Iowa, Marshall, Poweshiek, and Tama counties. The free event will take place via Zoom at 7 p.m. August 10th. Panelists include Iowa House Democratic Leader Jennifer Confers, Democrat of Windsor Heights, Iowa House Minority Whip Lindsey James, Democrat of Dubuque, and Luana Nelson Brown, MSPH Executive Director of Iowa Coalition for Collective Change. Advance registration is required at heartofiowadems.com/register. Everyone deserves the right to make their own health care decisions, especially when it comes to reproductive care and abortion, according to a Heart of Iowa Dems news release. While the ruling is tough and it might feel hopeless, we are fighting back. Find out where things stand in Iowa today and what you can do right now. We can't let them take away any more of our rights. For more information about Heart of Iowa Democrats and this series, visit heartofiowadems.com or email heartofiowadems@gmail.com. Pence to make another Iowa trip, by the Gazette Des Moines Bureau. Former Vice President Mike Pence is coming to the Iowa State Fair. Pence will make his fourth trip to Iowa since leaving office for a two-day swing, August 19th to 20th, Politico reported recently, citing a Pence aide familiar with the planning. In addition to making a stop at the Iowa State Fair, Pence will attend fundraisers for U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, U.S. House candidate Zach Nunn, and Bremer County Republicans, and a house party hosted by the Iowa Faith and Freedom Coalition, Politico reported. Pence is among many national Republicans who have made multiple trips to Iowa, which on the Republican side will remain the first state in the nation to cast its preferences for president in 2024. National Democrats are reevaluating their presidential nominating calendar, and Iowa Democrats may lose their number one spot on that side. 1 million contacts. The Republican Party of Iowa reported its 1 millionth voter contact over the weekend. The voter contacts are part of the party's efforts to encourage Republican voters to cast ballots in this fall's elections. How cornfields are about to make the Midwest unbearably humid. Lows from Texas to Illinois today to dip only to 75 to 80. During summer, the Midwest can experience some of the most oppressive humidity in the country. Fields in Iowa can be muggier than beaches in Miami. The culprit? Billions of stalks of corn. Akin to a person breathing, plants exhale water into the atmosphere through a process called evapotranspiration. In the Midwest and Northern Plains, corn and soybean crops draw moisture from the ground through their roots into their leaves, stems, and fruits. The water evaporates into the surrounding air through their leaves, joining forces with neighboring water molecules to humidify the air. Densely planted across millions of acres, corn can bring amazing levels of humidity during the middle of summer. 1 acre of corn can release 4,000 gallons of water per day, enough to fill a residential swimming pool in less than a week. The additional moisture from corn causes higher heat indexes, a measure of how hot it feels, taking humidity into account. It can turn an oppressive day into a dangerous one. The effects are strongest in the heart of the planted fields, but a person doesn't have to be standing in a field to feel the heat. The moisture follows the winds, mixing around to blanket the region. Temperatures on Tuesday were expected to climb from 95 to 105 in the plains and Midwest, but high humidity levels made it feel like 100 to 110 degrees from Texas to southern Minnesota. While hotter conditions favor higher rates of evapotranspiration, the process peaks when corn reaches its tasseling phase or when it hits maximum height with a crown of thin spikes and begins to sprout. Tasseling generally occurs around mid-July to August, about 80 to 90 days after planting. Humidity levels can increase in the span of a week or two once the plant hits the tasseling phase. The moisture from corn evapotranspiration may not only make it intolerably muggy during the day, it can also slow cooling at night, leaving little respite from the heat. Lows today from Texas to Illinois are predicted to dip only to 75 to 80, about 5 to 15 degrees above normal. When ingredients are in place for showers and storms, the added juice can make them more intense. This could be the case in parts of the Midwest today. Corn is not the only culprit in summer humidity, though. Soybeans also contribute substantial moisture through evapotranspiration. In other words, soybeans sweat too. Moisture also evaporates from bodies of water and even from the wet soils of areas with recent rains. Not to mention a good deal of the moisture that reaches the Corn Belt during summer is sourced from the Gulf of Mexico and sometimes even from the Pacific Ocean. In other words, corn does not act alone, but it can be that one more thing that pushes the summer heat from muggy to miserable, and that is an article from the Washington Post. Moving to today's editorial page, which is called Insight in the Gazette, this is a letter to the editor from David Dewar of Iowa City. The headline is Vote No on Iowa Gun Amendment. In recent years, Governor Kim Reynolds and Republican lawmakers have enacted numerous laws that make it easier to sell, buy, and carry guns in Iowa, citing the Constitution's Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Since the amendment proposes that a well-regulated militia is necessary to the security of a free state, and our right to bear arms is dependent on that proposition, I ask the following questions. Is the Maquoketa Cave State Park shooter a member of a well-regulated militia? Is the Greenwood Park Mall food court shooter a member? Is the Highland Park 4th of July parade shooter a member? The Uvalde Elementary School shooter? The Buffalo Tops Friendly Market shooter? Are the Proud Boys members of a well-regulated militia? The Oath Keepers? The Three Percenters? This fall, we'll vote on an amendment to the Iowa Constitution that makes gun ownership a fundamental right and adds, "Any and all restrictions of this right shall be subject to strict scrutiny." The phrase "subject to strict scrutiny" would virtually lock in place all current gun rights laws and severely hinder any efforts to consider common sense gun laws in the future. I encourage you to vote no to this proposed amendment. And this was a letter to the editor from David Dewar of Iowa City. Today's guest column on the editorial page is by Gannon Evans, who is a member of the American Conservative Conservation Coalition. He lives in Kansas and works for a state-based think tank. The headline is "Environment Needs Farmers." The one thing that brings together Hawkeyes and Cyclones in Iowa is the phrase ANF, or America Needs Farmers. Whether it's stopping to help fix a stranger's flat tire or waking up at 4 a.m. for a 12-hour workday, farmers have been the backbone of Midwest and Great Plains communities for centuries. Farmers are now fundamental to America's next challenge, fighting climate change. Already, farmers are the first to see the consequences of climate change. In 2020, a derecho that flattened crops from South Dakota to Ohio piled up $12.1 billion in damage as the costliest thunderstorm in U.S. history. In June, thousands of Kansas cattle died from heat stress during one of the increasingly common and longer droughts. Higher frequency of weather extremes, such as heavy precipitation, can harm irrigation systems and waterways. Embracing innovation in agriculture will help mitigate further damage. As the world's population keeps growing, there is an increasing demand for farmland to meet hunger needs. This results in a steady increase of farmland, leading to deforestation or overusage of arable land. Like climate change as a whole, this problem seems daunting and unsolvable at first, but the beauty is that real changes can happen on your average American farm. Drought-resistant, more nutritious strains of wheat, such as HB4, offer more product to food markets and increase farmer profits. Similarly, new technologies, such as drones to perform tasks like field-scale crop adjustment and analysis, as well as pesticide application, have opened routes for more efficient use of the same farmland. Governments can help farmers by reducing regulatory burdens, such as lengthy permit processes for new technologies. A recently popular idea is a regulatory sandbox, a type of agreement between government and businesses to operate with fewer restrictions under a specified time period. Multi-year consent decrees, and lengthy permit applications would be waived for farmers to allow rapid implementation of tech, with the understanding that feedback from the sandbox would be used to shape policy in the future. Erosion and forest fire detection through new GPS systems, flood control systems, and stormwater runoff measurement devices have all been pitched as ideas for an agricultural sandbox. In response to animal waste entering water supplies or releasing high amounts of methane into the atmosphere, farmers developed perennial grazing and grazing management systems, leading to healthier land and animals. However, government spending aimed at helping the environment still is mostly funneled to confined animal feeding operations, with high animal waste production leading to pollution issues in rural areas. The government needs to listen to farmers who have worked and lived on their land for generations, not blasting cash through a top-down approach. In a state like Iowa, a greater focus at the state and local level on agricultural innovation, cohesion with government, and effective land management will make us an industry leader and pioneer for the country and the world. And that is a guest column written by Gannon Evans, who is a member of the American Conservation Coalition. He lives in Kansas and works for a state-based think tank. And we'll finish out our half hour with a short item from today's Capital Notebook section. Broadband map. The state released its latest broadband internet map, which brings the state's map in compliance with federal guidelines in order to ensure the state is eligible for potential future federal grants. There is a public comment period for the map, during which time Iowans can challenge the map's accuracy. For example, an Iowan can file a challenge if they believe the map inaccurately displays access to high-speed broadband internet in any given area. The new map, which is the fifth version of the state's broadband access map, can be viewed at the Office of the Chief Information Officer's website at ocio.iowa.gov. The site also includes a link to where Iowans can challenge the new map. Challenges are due by September 1st. The new map contains more detailed data showing broadband access information down to individual addresses. Locations with access only to internet speeds of lower than 100 megabytes per second download and 20 megabytes per second upload could be eligible for future federal assistance. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, August 3, 2022 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Arnold Dale Wacker, 77, of Monticello, passed away on Monday, August 1, 2022 in a Sioux City hospital. A memorial service and burial in eastern Iowa will be announced at a later date. Arnie was born on March 27, 1945 in Monticello, Iowa, to Cecilia and Irwin Wacker. He graduated from Monticello High School, attended Tulane High School in Chicago, and served in the U.S. Army. Throughout his life, Arnie worked hard and played hard. He was adept at carpentry, electrical work, and plumbing, completely renovating two homes. He loved to fish, hang out with his buddies, golf in his brother's Wacker Open in California, take care of his yard, flowers, and vegetables, and cheer on the Miami Dolphins. He was a dedicated garage sale guy and collected antique furniture and toys over his lifetime. Arnie was a good and humble man who made friends wherever he went. He was honest to a fault, and no one ever questioned where they stood with him. Alice Marie Spencer, 87, of Cedar Rapids, died Saturday, July 30, 2022. Services, private. A visitation for the public will be held on Thursday, August 4, 2022, from 4 to 7 p.m. at Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home. Burial, Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. Survivors include her husband of 68 years, Robert Donald Spencer, her son Donald, Tammy Spencer of Cedar Rapids, her daughter Nancy, Don Hartwig of Marion, Iowa. Alice was born October 13, 1934 in Frederica, Iowa. She worked for bishops in Cedar Rapids. She enjoyed spending time with her family and friends. Alice and Robert were very dedicated to coaching in the Special Olympics. She will be greatly missed by all who knew her. David Albert Hermie Herman, 75, passed away peacefully on Monday, August 1, 2022, at his home in Atkins. Memorial Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, August 5, 2022, at St. John the 23rd Catholic Church in Fairfax, with the Reverend Father Richmond Zico as celebrant. Interment will be held at the Iowa Veterans Cemetery in Van Meter, Iowa, at a later date. Visitation will be held from 4 until 7 p.m. Thursday at the Phillips Funeral Home Chapel, 212 East 6th Street in Vinton. David was born on September 26, 1946, at Corn Belt Hospital in Belle Plaine, the son of Theodore Albert and Margaret Van Kirkverdy Herman. He graduated from Belle Plaine High School with the class of 1964. He served in the U.S. Naval Reserves from 1963 through 1964 during high school, and later served in the U.S. Army from 1966 through 1968 in the Vietnam War. On November 30, 1968, he was united in marriage to Diane Rolfs at St. Paul's Catholic Church in Traer. David worked as a machinist at Rockwell Goss. Hermie was very active in his community, where he was a proud member of the American Legion for over 40 years, and also served as commander for many years. He served on the Atkins City Council and as past president of the Atkins Community Club. He was a founding member of the 38 Fire Club. Mary Janice Jan Kinney, 85, longtime resident of Iowa City, died August 1, 2022 at Legacy Garden Senior Living Community, surrounded by her family. Mass of Christian Burial will begin at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, August 5th at St. Patrick's Catholic Church. The Very Reverend Rudolph Juarez will officiate, along with parish priest Father Joseph Sia. Visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. on Thursday, August 4th at Lensing Funeral Service in Iowa City, where a rosary will be recited at 3:30 p.m. Burial is planned at St. Peter's Cemetery in Cosgrove following Mass. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to St. Patrick's Church, or the family will make donations to Jan's favorite organizations. Jan was born September 15, 1936, in Iowa City, the daughter of Joseph and Josie McCabe Sheets. She was raised in Cosgrove, where she worked on the family farm, attended school, was a cheerleader, and met the love of her life in kindergarten. After graduation from Cosgrove High School in 1954, she married her love, Lawrence Larry Kinney, on July 5, 1955, at St. Peter's Catholic Church in Cosgrove. After she and Larry retired in 1991, they enjoyed spending time with grandchildren, traveling the world, especially enjoying winters in Destin, Florida, and cheering on the Hawkeyes and the Cubs. Emmett Vaughn, 48, of Cedar Rapids, passed away unexpectedly on Wednesday, July 27, 2022. There will be a celebration of life on Wednesday, August 3rd, from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Classic Event Center. There will be a visitation on Thursday, August 4th, 2022, at Cedar Memorial, from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. For full obituary, visit cedarmemorial.com. George John Farah Jr., 57, of Medford, Oregon, died at home of natural causes on July 20, 2022. Funeral service, 11:30 a.m. on Saturday, August 6, 2022, at Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Services, Cedar Rapids. Visitation will begin at 10 a.m. at the funeral home. Burial to follow at Cedar Memorial Park. George was born on September 28, 1964, in Cedar Rapids, graduating from Washington High School in 1983. George was an entrepreneur, having owned sportswear business Pro Jersey in Florida and California. He later settled in Las Vegas, Nevada, where he was a mortgage broker for many years, moving to Medford, Oregon in retirement. George enjoyed all things fast, including auto racing, expensive cars, lavish boats, and even remote-controlled speedboats. Driving his Lamborghinis and Ferraris were his passion, and he made many friends through his need for speed. He often would be seen wearing his George Farah Motorsports, Inc. branded auto racing gear, of which he was very proud. His family and friends meant the world to him. Thank you, George, for all the memories. Eileen Meyer, 101, of Deep River, passed away peacefully Monday morning, August 1, 2022, at the Mahaska Health Partnership Hospice Serenity House in Oskaloosa. Funeral services will begin at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, August 4th at the St. John's Lutheran Church near Victor. Visitation will begin at 9 a.m. on Thursday at the church with the family present to greet friends and relatives. Burial will be held in the St. John's Lutheran Cemetery with a luncheon to follow in the Fellowship Hall of the church. Memorial contributions may be made to the St. John's Lutheran Church. Holland Kobel Funeral Home of Montezuma is in charge of arrangements. Eileen Estella Meyer was born on June 21, 1921, in rural Blairstown, Iowa, the ninth child of William and Johanna Klaus Niebuhr. She attended country school and graduated from Blairstown High School. Eileen was baptized, confirmed, and married in the Grace Lutheran Church in Blairstown. In 1941, she was married to Roy Meyer and was a homemaker and helpmate to her husband on the Deep River Century Farm until his death in 1984. They raised four children there. After marriage, she became a member of St. John's Lutheran Church in rural Victor, where she was a member of the Ladies' Aid. Eileen helped make and tie many quilts for World Relief and wherever they were needed locally. In January of 1985, she moved to her home in Deep River and enjoyed making crafts and gifts for family and friends. She also enjoyed attending her grandchildren's activities. Eileen was a volunteer for the Deep River Millersburg School for 23 years, and a member of the Deep River Legion Auxiliary. Diane Beth Osman Lucor of Cedar Rapids passed away on July 30, 2022 at the age of 69, following complications from a major stroke. She passed peacefully at home with the support of Mercy's Hospice Services and amazing staff and surrounded by her loved ones. Services will be held at Cedar Memorial Westside Chapel, 1221 First Avenue Southwest, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, 52404. On Thursday, August 4th, 2022, at 11 a.m., followed by an interment at Eben Israel Cemetery at 207 Hawthorne Drive Southwest. A luncheon will follow at Hiawatha City Hall and Community Center, 101 Emmons Street, Hiawatha, Iowa, 52233. In lieu of flowers, the family has requested that donations be made to the Temple Judah Landscape Fund in an effort to retree and beautify Temple Judah after the derecho and for many years to come. Online condolences may be directed to the family at cedarmemorial.com. Kathy Brown Werning, 96, of Newhall, died Thursday, July 28, 2022, at the Vinton Lutheran Home. Graveside memorial services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, August 5, 2022, at St. John's Cemetery, rural Newhall, with Reverend Stephen Remfer officiating. For those of you who know Kathy, you have probably heard many stories and reflections about Central Lutheran School. In lieu of flowers, please send memorial donations to Central Lutheran School. Kathy lived a blessed and long life. She loved her husband Delbert, son Tim, grandsons, parents, brothers, sisters, nieces, nephews, and Delbert's family. Kathy grew up in beautiful farm country near Falls City, Nebraska, and then in St. Joseph, Missouri. Kathy raised her son Tim in Omaha. Later in life, Kathy married Delbert Werning. Kathy and Delbert lived many happy years on Delbert's farm, and they especially liked gardening and farm life together. As a career Lutheran school teacher in Omaha and Newhall, Kathy did the work she was called and loved to do. She had a lot of joy in teaching children and in sharing Jesus' love with her students. She worked in pre-kindergarten and elementary programs. In later years, she was in contact through her church with many who had been her students, and she greatly appreciated their kindness to her. Kathy liked studying and earned a bachelor's degree at Concordia University in Seward, Nebraska, and a master's degree at the University of Iowa. Reverend John C. Father Jack Paisley, 86, of Dubuque, died Sunday, July 31, 2022, at his home. Visitation will be from 4 to 6:45 p.m. Wednesday, August 3, 2022, at Church of the Resurrection, followed by a prayer service at 6:45 p.m. The Mass of Christian Burial for Father Paisley will be 10:30 a.m. Thursday, August 4, 2022, at Church of the Resurrection, 4300 Asbury Road, Dubuque, celebrated by Archbishop Michael Jackles and priests of the Archdiocese of Dubuque. Burial will be in Resurrection Cemetery in Dubuque. Father Jack was born December 7, 1935, in Dubuque, Iowa, the son of George William and Bernice Marie Schuhert Paisley. He attended grade school at St. Patrick's in Dubuque and then went on to Loras Academy, graduating in 1953. He graduated from Loras College in 1957 and completed his theological studies at Immaculate Conception Cemetery in Conception, Missouri, where he graduated in 1962. Just celebrating his 60th anniversary, Father Jack was ordained a priest on June 2, 1962, at St. Rose Priory in Dubuque by Archbishop James J. Byrne. Father Jack's parish assignments took him all over the Archdiocese of Dubuque. He was a member of National Association of Priest Pilots and volunteered on many service trips. He enjoyed traveling and was an avid skier. In lieu of flowers, memorials have been established for Father Jack's favorite local charities. Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory is in charge of the arrangements. A photo tribute can be viewed and condolences sent to the family by visiting Father Jack's obituary at hskfhcares.com. Sister Jean Margaret Black, BVM 98, died July 27, 2022 at Mount Carmel Bluffs, 1160 Carmel Drive, Dubuque, Iowa. Funeral services will be Thursday, August 4, 2022, in the Mary Frances Clark Chapel at Mount Carmel Bluffs. Virtual visitation begins at 9 a.m., followed by funeral mass. All services may be viewed through live video stream beginning at 9:15 a.m. Sister Jean Margaret was born on August 30, 1923, in Holbrook, Iowa, to John and Mary McCarty Black. She entered the Sisters of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary on February 2, 1945, from St. Michael Parish, Holbrook, Iowa. Sister Jean Margaret was an elementary teacher at Visitation in Des Moines and Hays Catholic in Muscatine, Iowa. She also taught in Nebraska, Montana, and California. Memorials may be given to Sisters of Charity, BVM Support Fund, 1100 Carmel Drive, Dubuque, Iowa, 52003, or online at bvmsisters.org support donate. Mildred Peters, 99, of Delhi, Iowa, passed away on Monday, August 1st, 2022, in Manchester. Visitation for Mildred will be held 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, August 5th, 2022, at Bonenkamp Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Manchester. Funeral service will be held 10:30 a.m. Saturday, August 6, 2022, at Delhi United Methodist Church with Reverend Keith Pitts officiating. Burial will take place at Evergreen Cemetery, Delhi. Bonenkamp Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service is in charge of arrangements. Mildred was born on October 15, 1922, in Monticello, Iowa, the daughter of Carl and Opal Wheeler Clark. She graduated from Delhi High School. Mildred married Raymond Peters on September 22, 1940, in Delhi. Five children were born into this union. She was employed by Rockwell Collins Aviation and worked there for many years until her retirement in 1978. Mildred was a member of the Delhi United Methodist Church, where she was involved in United Methodist Club, Women's Club of Delhi, American Legion Auxiliary Club of Delhi, and helped with Delhi senior meals. She enjoyed quilting and sewing, baking, especially cinnamon rolls. going on trips, and working on puzzle books. Mildred loved spending time with her friends and family. She will be greatly missed by those who knew and loved her. Philip Lawrence Holland, 87, of Coralville, passed away at University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics on Sunday morning with Marilyn by his side. Phil was born on a farm near Collins, Iowa, to Lloyd D. Holland and Doris Kegel Holland on November 21, 1934. He attended Collins schools, kindergarten through high school. He then attended Drake University on a basketball scholarship until the siren song of a professional baseball contract was offered to him by the Baltimore Orioles. He played in their farm system in the Appalachian League for Wytheville, Virginia, until he suffered a shoulder injury. During high school, he broke many basketball and baseball records in his school, the county, and state. After baseball, he returned to Iowa and was in sales for the rest of his professional career. He met his future wife, Marilyn Harris, in Des Moines, and he and Marilyn agreed it was a match made in heaven. They were married on January 23, 1955, in Iowa City, and enjoyed over 67 years of marriage together. Phil's greatest community passion was raising funds to endow the pediatric chaplaincy at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. He worked tirelessly with the Iowa City Old Capitol Kiwanis Club for almost 30 years on this project. A person never ran into Phil between New Year and Easter without being offered the opportunity to buy a ticket to the Kiwanis Good Friday Prayer Breakfast. This year, the U of I Center for Advancement, which manages the fund, honored him by naming the fund after him. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Philip L. Holland Kiwanis Pediatric Chaplaincy Fund at the UI Center for Advancement, 1 Park Road, Iowa City, Iowa, 52246. Memorial services will be held at 2 p.m. Sunday, August 7, 2022, at St. Andrew Presbyterian Church, which will be followed by a time of fellowship and refreshments. To share a memory, thought, or condolence with his family, please visit Gay and Chia Funeral Home and Cremation Service website, gayandchia.com. Raymond Dick Ettringer, 75, of Anamosa, died peacefully in his home surrounded by his family on Wednesday, July 27, 2022. A mass of Christian burial will be held at St. Patrick's Catholic Church, Anamosa, on Friday, August 12, 2022 at 11 a.m. Friends may call from 10 a.m. to the time of service at the church. Military honors will be accorded by the U.S. Army and the Anamosa Veterans Honor Guard following the funeral mass. Private burial will take place at a later date. Please visit GetchOnline.com and share your thoughts, memories, stories, and condolences with the family by using the guest book. Dick was a caring husband, father, grandpa, brother, and friend. His battle with serious medical issues in recent years showed his courage in facing life's challenges with a sense of humor and handsome smile. Despite his pain, he proved to stay strong and quick-witted to the end. Richard Joseph Ettringer was born August 28, 1946, in Waterloo, Iowa, to parents Peter and Margaret Sadler Ettringer. He graduated from Immaculate Conception in Fairbank, Iowa, 1965, and proudly joined the United States Army Reserve in 1967, earning an honorable discharge in 1972. Dick worked as an electrician at John Deere in Waterloo, retiring in 2006 after 40 years of dedicated service. Ronald L. Coffin, 82, of Cedar Rapids, passed away peacefully at home on Monday, August 1, 2022, surrounded by his loving family. A memorial visitation will be held Friday, August 5, 2022, from 2 p.m. at the Cedar Memorial Chapel Stateroom until time of a memorial service, 3 p.m., in the Cedar Memorial Chapel of Memories. A luncheon will follow at Faith Lutheran Church, 155 Boyson Road, Marion, Iowa, 52302. Ronald was born on May 13, 1940, in Des Moines, Iowa, the son of Paul and Mickey McElvogue Coffin. Ron graduated with his Bachelor of Science degree from Iowa State and Columbia University with his Master of Science in Engineering. He worked for Bell Telephone Laboratories in New Jersey from 1963 to 1968. He retired from Rockwell Collins after 30 years. Ron enjoyed electronics, woodworking, and computer programming. He will be greatly missed by all who knew and loved him. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be directed to the family. Darrell G. Truitt of Iowa City passed away July 27, 2022. He was 81 years old. A funeral mass for Darrell is scheduled for Friday, August 5, 10 a.m. at St. Wenceslaus Church, 618 East Davenport Street, Iowa City. Visitation will be held on Thursday, August 4, from 4 to 7 p.m. at Gay and Chia Funeral Home and Cremation, 2720 Muscatine Avenue, Iowa City. Daryl will be laid to rest with military honors at Oakland Cemetery. A complete obituary can be read at gayandchia.com. Moving on to sports. Iowa State Football Media Day, Cultivating Calm. Deckers takes the spot under center for Cyclones. By Rob Gray, correspondent. Ames. 70 days separated the first fateful snap from the last. In that span last season, Iowa State quarterback Hunter Deckers went from slightly experienced college football player to semi-veteran backup behind Brock Purdy. The former West Sioux standout threw two touchdown passes and ran for another score within that relatively brief time frame. He also tossed one interception, but numbers didn't define his growth into the Cyclones' clear number one quarterback entering this fall camp. Demeanor did. "Just being calm," Deckers said on Tuesday's media day at Jack Trice Stadium. "I mean, first snap, I wouldn't really say I was nervous, but it's always something like you're anxious, all that type of stuff. And then going into my last snap, I would say you're not really thinking about it. Your nerves are gone. They are. They're gone. You don't even think about it anymore because you're in the middle of a game." Now, Deckers finds himself on the cusp of a full season of snaps for the younger-than-usual Cyclones, who must replace several other key starters, including at running back, tight end, and linebacker. Head coach Matt Campbell and his staff, of course, have planned for this transition. And by all accounts, today's upstarts, such as Deckers, are poised to make their own lasting marks on the 2022 season and beyond. "He's actually been on the field and had the opportunity to play the game of football and command the offense," said Campbell, whose team notched its program record fifth straight winning season in 2021. "I think those experiences, whether they were positive or maybe not as positive, were great learning opportunities. Those are always positive for me as the coach. They're also inconclusive. Therein lies the reason for excitement or concern, depending on one's mental makeup, as ISU enters a new season without Purdy and several other of the best players who have donned a Cyclone uniform, such as running back Breece Hall, tight end Charlie Kolar, and linebacker Mike Rose, among others." "I'll probably say it a million times," Campbell said. "Man, coach, what kind of team do you think you have?" "Well, we don't know, and you're not going to know until we get into the season and we have to play in front of 70,000 people and we have to go execute our assignment and do our job. So stay tuned. Just don't expect Campbell or anyone else affiliated with the Cyclones to be anything less than bullish about the team's prospects in 2022, despite the high-profile personnel shuffles and diminished outside expectations. "It's going to be exciting," said former Cedar Rapids Washington star Orion Vance, who chose to return for a sixth season because of the extra year of eligibility granted to players because of the COVID-19 pandemic. "I can't wait. For me, it's always great every year, year in and year out, seeing guys who no one knows about or guys people haven't seen play come out and ball." So who are some of the guys besides Deckers? It's an expansive group, beginning at running back, where Jarrell Brock returns the most experience, but will be pushed by other promising players such as Deion Silas, Eli Sanders, and Cartebius Norton. "We'll take as long as it takes," Campbell said. "Is it by committee? Is there somebody that kind of steps out into the forefront? I think no matter what it is, we feel very confident that whatever it is, it's got the tools to be pretty special and has the tools to be up to the standard that running back room has lived through the course of that last couple of years." The same holds true at quarterback as Deckers takes the reins calmly, coolly, and with heightened confidence. 32 days from Tuesday's media gathering, he'll take the next biggest snap of his career in the season opener against Southern Missouri State. No nerves, no pressure, all upside. "What really helps is your preparation for the game," Deckers said. "Mentally, physically, all of it." And finishing up with some local business news. Gazette, Southeast Iowa Union acquire four weekly newspapers. Ownership to begin with today's editions by the Gazette. The Gazette and the Southeast Iowa Union have purchased four weekly newspapers in Belle Plaine, Marengo, and Williamsburg, and in Poweshiek County. The papers were purchased from McLean, Virginia-based chain Gannett Company and begin with today's editions. Financial terms of the sale were not disclosed. The titles, the oldest of which dates back to 1856, include the Belle Plaine Star Press Union, Marengo Pioneer Republican, Williamsburg Journal Tribune, and the Poweshiek County Chronicle Republican. The papers serve portions of Iowa, Benton, Poweshiek, and Keokuk counties. "We are honored to be the new caretakers of this historically strong publication, the paper that so many people grew up with and looked forward to reading each week. Equally important, we are excited to be a part of these strong communities," Southeast Iowa Union publisher Matt Bryant, who will manage the papers, said in a statement. The papers, which are delivered to subscribers by mail, will be published on Wednesday. Increased local content, including sports, is planned, he said. The paper will also seek to better support the area business community through advertising and other tools, he said. Managing editor Melinda Wickman, who has been with the papers for 34 years, will continue to produce the papers under the new ownership. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, August 3, 2022. I'm your reader, Janet Griffith. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.